His status?
No, I think Nate Oates said basically, we don't think we're going to have him. You know, so never put it past Nate Oates, though, to find a way. He'll try and get Charles Bediako back 3 years after he last played college basketball.
Well, no, did you not see the spin zone from the radio show Monday?
What'd he say?
Cop, his team's really prepared for this. They've been playing all year with and without guys.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I rank the top three most watchable games with the combination of this. You have a villain type of program, and you have serious upset potential in my top three. Like, that's a pretty reliable combination. I now view Nate Oates as one of college basketball's primary villains.
I said this yesterday. It is so – if, like, I listed characteristics of kind of what appeals to me as a basketball coach, Nate checks a lot of them, yet for whatever reason, I'm just like, ugh, take it away. Like, efficient offense. Do not waste time on defense other than your big guy. Put him in the middle and tell him to block shots. It's up to him for defense. Still wears a sport coat each and every night. Like, clearly does not care whether or not his kids are Boy Scouts or not. Can they play? Like, all of these things are, like, kind of what I value, but there's something about the packaging that I'm like, take it away.
Yeah. I think a lot of people vibe with that, Jeffrey, and I think it makes Alabama a team that people like to hate watch a little bit. And Hofstra coming in here, they want to play a low possession game. They can shoot the three ball.
And ironically, their coach's name's Speedy.
It's Speedy Claxton, exactly right. Beloved former player at Hofstra himself. And then Cruz Davis, man, that's your name to know for that game, because he started out playing for Rick Pitino at Iona and St. John's, and he's a stud, left-handed guard, gets to the bucket. Like, he can break down the Alabama defense. So I think America will be entertained if, after all the Bediako drama, after all that Nate Oates has basically done over the last several years to turn himself into a villain, if they are the victim of a Cinderella there.
Cruz Davis, however, sounds like a third baseman from, like, DeSoto County.
Cruz Davis for Center Hill.
Yeah. Big time bat. Look out for him. SEC potential. Number two, North Carolina VCU. You've mentioned this game. You've got it on upset alert. Obviously, Carolina playing without Caleb Wilson has been a completely different team. We've got Phil Martelli Jr. with VCU. Why do you got him on such upset alert?
Well, VCU is actually pretty live, even when they don't hit threes. Like, that's what I when I look at a teams and I'm trying to pick to see who's going to advance, it's like, okay, if they don't have their fastball, can they still win a game? That's why I really can't quit Florida either. It's like, we did see them lay an egg against Vandy in the SEC tournament, but they also got torched by a really hot shooting team in that game. Like, we saw the day before, Florida can win a game when they don't hit any threes, and they can win it pretty convincingly because of the way they rebound. VCU, similar characteristics. Like, they didn't really even hit threes in the A-10 tournament, but they still won games anyway. So, like, they're gritty, they're physical, they're deep. I don't know that you can really say any of those things about North Carolina right now. They're not deep. I don't know how gritty they are. They do have a little bit of physicality still with Henry Vissar, but without Caleb Wilson, that's the engine, man. He's the engine. And I think their guards are, like, comparable level guards to VCU's guards. I love Seth Trimble, but across the board, like, VCU's older, they're deeper, and they wreak havoc. Like, I just think I think VCU's going to win the game.
And number one, Kentucky and Santa Clara.
Because how funny would it be if John Calipari went further in the NCAA tournament yet again than Kentucky?
Oh, he's winning the divorce right now.
Yeah, I think it's over. I think we've called it. Yeah. He's got full custody of the kids.
This is like when Brady was running up the score by winning the COVID Super Bowl. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into the list. We've got Rory's Masters Champions dinner menu. Discuss that. We got Grizzlies tonight, as well as other news from the world of sports. We'll talk about it next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. It's that time of year again, March Madness. As you follow your favorite teams and guess who's going to win it all, it's also a great time to strategize your financial plan. Champion your finances by setting strong savings goals, creating a budget that works for you, or consolidating your debt. Don't worry, you don't have to do this alone, because Leaders Credit Union, our friends, are here to help you navigate your financial story. Stop by one of their branches in Arlington or Bartlett, or visit the special website for our listeners, leaderscu.com/ESPN, leaderscu.com/ESPN, to get started today. Leaders wants to be your champion for financial life. Let them do so. Again, it is a credit union that is owned for the benefit of their members, over 84,000 members strong. They're rated in the top 10% of healthiest credit unions nationwide by depositaccounts.com. And they're also listed in the top 100 credit unions in the nation by S&P Global. Again, check out the special webpage just for our listeners, leaderscu.com/ESPN, to learn how they can champion your financial story and even waive your membership fee. We'll continue our preview of the NCAA tournament with Cobb during the next segment. We'll get into some superlatives for the tournament. Before we do that, let's get into the list. The Memphis Grizzlies. All right, Cobb. It's been a spectacular last week of basketball from the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies now within one game of the Mavericks and the Pelicans. I feel good about the Grizzlies getting passed by the Pelicans, because I just contend the Pelicans have every incentive to keep on winning. They're definitely playing at a higher level. Here's where the issue arises. Basically, the Mavericks and the Grizzlies have the exact same schedule, except I think the Mavericks get one game against the Warriors.
But isn't Cooper Flagg still playing?
He is a decent amount.
As long as he keeps playing, like, I like the Grizzlies' chances of being worse than Dallas.
The reason why I keep harping on the six is that gives you the possibility of getting past. You don't have to crack the top four. So you could get past, basically, you could get jumped by one team and still be at that seven spot. And I think if you're at the seven, you're going to at least wind up with one of the two point guards.
One of the two being Darius Acuff or Kingston Fleming?
Correct.
Yeah. Sign me up. I would sign right now, specifically for Acuff. Like, I love Fleming's too. But I've just become more and more infatuated with Darius Acuff, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that I finally saw him in person. But
he is, man. I think he is the most fun player in the draft. I guess we do have to ask the simple question. Are we concerned by the fact that my guy's not exactly a lockdown defender?
well, but how
they
many
ask him to do so much on offense. He can't waste any energy on that end of the floor.
Yeah. No, that I mean, he could be a liability on the defensive end, but you can cover him up, right? Like, you got enough other.
Yeah, look at all the other defenders around him.
Exactly. Cedric Coward can cover for him on the help side, and Zach Edey's protecting the paint, and Jalen Wells is a pretty good perimeter defender, and you're going to draft some stud four who can play defense. So, I mean, that's kind of the problem with any guard in this era of the NBA. Like, which of these guards in this draft class are you looking at and like, oh, yeah, they're a stud defender. Like, yeah, they're a real two-way player. Like, all these guards are offensive firecrackers who have defensive questions.
I think Fleming's is a better defender than Acuff.
Well, he also plays for Houston. He has no choice.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm also in the camp of, like, I don't care. Find other four guys, okay. Four other guys that can defend.
Where are you at on, like, does this thing with Mikal Brown Jr. not playing in the NCAA tournament, like, it turns me off even more. Like, it turns me off. I'm sorry.
I think the question becomes is Mikal Brown or what? Because to me, kind of the nightmare scenario, the reason why I'm so hell-bent on getting out of the eight is I feel like eight is the worst spot to draft at, because I think you're going to miss a lot of the guys that I want, and then you're going to wind up with, like, do we take Mikal Brown? Do we take Nate Amint?
I think if you're at eight, you invert. You go power forward first. You go power forward first. And
Steinbach.
Then you go,
get Steinbach before the Thunder draft him.
Or Yaxel. And then you get your guard with the second pick, either like a Braden Burries or a LeBaron Filon, or, I mean, shoot, we've got – Adam Finkelstein, who's now doing the big board for us. I mean, he's our director of scouting. He's got Bennett Sturts at number 14 on our big board. I don't know if I agree with that, But depending on how the Grizzlies interpret Bennett starts, like maybe that's an option. So I think you could invert pretty easily. You could go power forward first and then go point guard next.
How tall is Sturts?
He's listed at 6'4". You want to talk about defensive questions, though. I mean,
my bigger problem with Sturts is, like, he just reeks of, like, great college player.
Yeah, I mean, he's a white point guard who started at a D2 school. I'm sorry, I just have a struggle.
Like, I get it. Cedric didn't start at the biggest school. It's like, I don't think Sturts is going to test off the map.
No, he won't. He's a great player. He's a great player.
So was Luka Garza.
Yeah. And so was Braden Smith. But, you know, I mean, come on.
All right. Let's don't let go of the rope tonight, Grizz. Like, man, don't.
Yeah, keep your eye on the prize.
Yeah, exactly.
There's some prizes. Don't get too gung ho on trying to win a game.
Correct. Rory McIlroy. All right, Cobb. We got the champions dinner menu. You ready?
Yes. I need to know how much these bottles of wines are. But yeah, go through the whole menu. Go through the whole thing.
All right. To start, we got a choice of four appetizers. You got the peach and ricotta flatbread. That comes with balsamic and honey, or hot honey and basil. We've got rock shrimp tempura with a creamy spicy sauce. Bacon wrapped dates with goat cheese and almond. Gotta honestly say, I didn't know we were bacon wrapping dates. And then grilled elk sliders, which kind of feels like we're just kind of showing off there.
I want all of them. Can I get all of those appetizers?
I believe you can, because it's all on Rory's tab. First course, the yellowfin tuna carpaccio with foie gras, toasted baguette, and chives.
What is carpaccio?
Carpaccio is like the thinly sliced raw fish. Like, it would look like kind of like deli meat almost.
If they didn't talk about it on The Sopranos, I don't know what it is.
Carpaccio. Crudo is what the French call it.
Carpaccio is also typically meat, not fish.
Correct.
George, do you like what would be a well-prepared carpaccio?
Great question. I try not to eat raw meat.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm staying away. You're trying to win a major and you're going to trust Rory to feed you raw meat?
Well, that would be the question, is what's Rory eating?
Grilled elk sliders. I mean, that sounds like
that
a great way to
fire.
Carbo load. Yeah. Did I ever tell you, have you ever had elk before?
I've had elk jerky.
Yeah.
I've had
a bison burger, but I don't think I've ever had elk.
I've only had it like in the dried variety. All right, our main courses, a Wagyu filet mignon or seared salmon. Paired with traditional Irish champ, no idea what that is. I assume it's some type of potato. Sautéed Brussels sprouts, glazed carrots with brown butter, and crispy Vidalia onion rings.
Okay, Irish champ is mashed potatoes with chopped scallions, butter, and milk.
So that appears to be the only Irish thing on the menu.
Okay, question. I was watching The Price is Right yesterday.
Yep.
And it just felt like Irish cultural appropriation.
You know the best part about that is that thing was probably filmed like 3 months ago, and they probably just told everybody, like, here's a bunch of green shirts. This is for our St. Patty's Day episode.
So they were like, one of the prizes was a full-on trip to Chicago to see the river turn green. And I'm like, well, today is St. Patrick's Day. Are you literally getting on a plane from Hollywood and going there? So, you know, you're right. They taped it way in
advance. Yeah. No, they film them. Like, Drew Carey's got one of the greatest gigs in the world. Like, they film, like, the whole season over, like, a month.
So, I loved it yesterday. A little girl, 1 year old now, and she was way into watching The Price is Right. She was clapping when they won their prizes. And I was like, you know what? This is so much better than watching Bluey or watching Miss Rachel, because I like it too. I like The Price is Right.
Let's not put Bluey and Miss Rachel in the same category.
Okay, I mean, I'd rather watch Bluey than Miss Rachel, but if The Price is Right was also an option,
yeah, no, I would definitely Price is Right overall. Miss Rachel's an attack.
But it does the job.
It's better than like the cocoa melon mind numbing, like
dopamine addiction.
Yeah, get that out of here. But and then Miss Rachel does like a here we go loop de loo, and my daughter always wants to dance to that. And I'm like, honey, daddy's tired.
our girl is obsessed with Wheels on the Bus. She'll just she wakes up in the morning.
Oh God, I have to sing it every night before bed. Daddy, Wheel on the Bus.
Rosie doesn't really talk a whole lot, so she just does the motion with her hands.
More, more.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. She more. Says that all the time, and it's great. I love it. But I would take Price is Right.
You know what's been a tough one? My daughter loves like singing and dancing. There's a lot of nursery rhymes I don't remember the words to.
Yeah, you realize like you know the first verse, but then you forget.
No, and then like you might know like the first line, and you're like, I know the tune, honey.
Well, dadgum, there's like seven different Wheels on the Bus. You got the wipers, you got the driver, you got the mommies, you got the daddies. Like, I mean, I kind of forget what.
Well,
all...
and then like some people throw motor in. I'm like, I don't really remember that.
Yeah, but the good thing is you can just sort of make it up.
No, that's the they don't understand. Although my daughter's weird. I hope you're sitting down for this. My daughter's a pretty good talker.
Uh-huh.
Like, she's...
Shocking.
...pretty good at putting sentences together, like, especially for her age. The dessert is sticky toffee pudding, vanilla ice cream, and a warm toffee sauce. And, of course, for all the Rory stands out there, everybody knows the main event's got to be his wine cellar. Although, more importantly, Augusta National's wine cellar, which allegedly might be, like, the greatest wine cellar of all. All right, here we go, Cobb. The first is a Salon S. Brut from Champagne. It's a 2015. That bad boy retails for, I believe it's $1,300. Let me double check. That the average price for that is $1,326 per bottle.
A little out of my price range. But I'm sure it's delicious.
All right. We got a 2022 Domaine Le Fleuve Bétard Montrachet Pollini Montrachet. That is a white burgundy. This bad boy retails $2,371 per bottle.
Wow. Think about how many bottles of bottom shelf wine you could get for one bottle.
Now, my buddy did point out he found a retailer that if we bought the case of 12, we could get it for about $10,000. So we'd be saving, you know, like 60% there.
So my Master's watch party won't have that.
Uh-huh.
But if you want to order it for the golf trip in May,
let me tell you what you're getting. Let me tell you what you're getting at the golf trip in May. You are getting Kirkland Signature, red, white.
Okay, well, you will be distinguished from the crowd because that will be a classier option. Than...
Well, and then whatever, bourbon. Like, you know, do they still give us bourbon?
Yeah, yeah. Last three, four times I've gone, right before you start, you get some of their Sweetens Cove Signature. And you're also supposed to bring some. And there's a honey hole. There's a mailbox behind the seventh green. And you leave one in the mailbox, but then somebody else, you know, there's always some in the mailbox. So it's one of the harder holes. You come off the toughest green, you go to the mailbox, and you can take a rip.
All right, this was the biggest upset of all. Cobb, his red selection, a 1990 Chateau Lafite Rothschild. That is a Bordeaux from the Puylac village. This bad boy is available for only $1,273 per bottle. If you would have told me that his white selection and his champagne would both be more expensive than his red selection, I would never have guessed that. Knowing my boy Roy.
Wow. Yeah, that's now, especially being such a well-aged choice.
He made up for it because I don't think I've ever seen this move either. His dessert wine, a 1989 Chateau, let's see what this bad boy is, de Yquem. That is a Bordeaux dessert wine, $536 or $556 per bottle. I don't think I've ever seen a dessert wine that's $556. So shout out, Roy.
Yeah, it must pair well with the sticky toffee pudding.
Correct.
So what I would grade this as like a pretty appealing menu. I feel like there's some things here that I would like. I would like all the appetizers. I would probably skip the yellowfin tuna carpaccio, and I would be more than happy to imbibe in either the Wagyu filet mignon or the seared salmon. I think either one of those would be delicious.
All right, so ESPN's got the how does this rank against previous winners? So with Scotty, we got, remember it was like the sliders and the firecracker shrimp. He had a Texas chili, Texas bean stew for those out there that know. His selections were wood-fired cowboy ribeye or blackened redfish, warm chocolate skillet cookie. I don't know. To me, that's like somebody from Texas with money. Like, that's a solid menu. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, is it going to blow you away? No. But at the same time, it's like there's nothing wrong with that. All right. George was partial to Rahm's because George spent a summer over in Spain. George, do you have it pulled up? Because I can read French. I don't really read Spanish that well.
How many of these tapas y pinchos do you want?
All right. Ibericos.
Yep. Ibericos. That is
Idiazlaba.
Idiazabal con trufa negra, tortilla de patatas, chistorra con patata, lentejas estofadas, and croqueta de pollo.
And then he gave us a salad.
De changurro.
A crab salad. That's not bad. Then we got a Basque ribeye, so that's like just a seasoned ribeye.
That thing's so good.
Some type of fish I've never heard of. And then a puff pastry cake. Rahm did not include his wine selections, but I think everything was Spanish. My favorite one going back was Patrick Reed's, because Patrick Reed's is just the ultimate fat kid. Every side was with like cream, it's like mac and cheese, corn creme brulee, cream spinach.
This one's awesome.
And then my other favorite part is like when they picked out the wines, it's like he went and bought the most expensive wine from Costco. He got the 2013 Caymus. He's like, that's classy, right?
Yeah, that kind of aligns with Patrick. I'm surprised there weren't Starbucks refreshers with
no. You know, what is it? No additives.
No exclusions.
No exclusions.
Yeah. Tiger's 2020 menu is pretty solid too. Prime steak and chicken fajitas, and then he had the Augusta roll, which is like a sushi roll that actually sounds pretty good with some shrimp in it.
Oh, I thought y'all don't eat raw fish.
Yeah, but yeah.
Sushi's different.
Raw fish. I wouldn't eat raw fish if I were about to compete in a major. I just wouldn't do it. There's too much risk there.
I trust Augusta because they're literally like airlifting everything in.
So I would actually just serve Chick-fil-A if I won the Masters. So
sponsored.
If I ever win the Masters,
the biggest upset was like Dustin Johnson not having chicken nuggets.
Right. I mean, you got to, because think about the people who are in this room. You have Jack Nicklaus is here. You can't, you have to serve Jack something that he will like, you know, and there's a lot of, Bernhard Langer is in this room. Tom Watson, right? Like some of the elder statesmen.
Ian Woosnam.
Tom Watson. Yeah, right.
Boozy Woozy.
Yeah.
Yes, Watson is Watson didn't win the PGA. That's the only one he didn't win.
Was Bubba Watson,
was it
too,
Reed or
is
DJ
a Masters
who had pigs in a blanket
that's,
on there?
That's DJ.
That he had pigs in a blanket on there?
Yeah, I like pigs in a blanket.
Yeah.
Don't let the four aces
really
get hot. They've won back-to-back team events.
I actually watched a little bit of the indoor thing last night. I've enjoyed that when I've had the time to watch it.
It's fine background noise. Do I get super into it? No, but it's that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I feel like they've done a much better job with the presentation of it this year.
All right, let's take a break because I want to get into some superlatives. Let's get back to the NCAA tournament. We'll talk about it next with Cobb right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. If you're thinking about getting engaged, make sure you go see our friends over at Robert Irwin Jewelers because they're the number one place to buy diamond engagement rings. Why might you ask? Well, because you get more choices at Robert Irwin Jewelers. They have a fantastic collection of both natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. You can even customize your ring and get a never-worn ring or never-before-worn ring, and you can do so with peace of mind with the Meant to Be guarantee. That means that for any reason, if you're unhappy with your custom-made engagement ring, you got a full 365 days to return it, no questions asked. If you can dream it, Robert Irwin Jewelers can make your engagement ring from a picture, a drawing, or even just an idea that you have in your head. Also, make sure you check out their free ring sizing for life. If your engagement ring or wedding band no longer fits, don't worry. Robert Irwin Jewelers has ring sizing, and it is free for the life of the jewelry. Also, check out their jewelry spa service. Take your jewelry in there. You come out with it looking like the day that you bought it. They also have great financing options. You can ask her now and pay later with financing like 24 months deferred interest, or you can take up 60 months to pay at a low APR. With over four decades of experience in the jewelry business, Robert Irwin Jewelers has become a trusted name known for providing timeless treasures for generations of family. Go check out their locations, including the Diamond Showroom right there on Perkins Extended, across from Laurelwood. They also have the location at Bartlett on Stage Road right next to the Kroger. You can also shop online at rijewelers.com. Bigger, brighter diamonds, all at better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers. All right, Cobb. So one of my favorite things to do is watch the first four and see if we're going to be able to identify a commercial that is going to just be absolutely grating. I'm quietly confident. I didn't see anything last night that I'm like, oh, that's going to get awful.
Yeah, that's, I mean, low-key great. Now, are we going to get the AT&T girl again? Is that going to be a thing? You remember, right, the last several years we've had. Now let's go to AT&T's Lily for a breakdown of the March Madness, and then some, like, goofy AT&T commercial.
No, AT&T recently has been doing the players. I think that was the one with Candace Parker last night was AT&T.
Yeah, as long as it's not the stupid thing with, like, going to Lily or whatever, because you could just see, like, Ernie just hating his life every time he had to tee up that advertisement.
Yeah, Ernie was just thinking about the check the whole time. Like, you could see him do the cost-benefit analysis, like, in his head. But they've gotten away from that. One of the guys that was on Righteous Gemstones, he did that. Remember, like, he was, like, the no-personality announcer. That was one they went to. I think Lily's been out of the game for a little bit.
Good. I hope they keep her on the sidelines, because I wasn't a big Lily fan. My biggest concern is, can I get the March Madness app to work? I really hope that I can.
Well, the other question for us, I know maybe you have a little bit different climate now. Did we avoid the tournament's going to be ruined by severe weather? Did we get it a week early?
Yeah, hopefully so. But there were concerns about flight logistics. In fact, commissioner or the committee chair, Keith Gill, told us on a call last week that the charter flight market is competitive right now, and he said it was because of ice.
Yep.
Because there's all these.
No, my buddy that books airline travel, that was an issue at bowl season as well, because ice is like using a lot
of. Knock on wood, I haven't actually heard of any travel complications yet, and most teams should be on the ground at their location. You know what's going to be hilarious? UCLA and Mick Cronin, they're the better seeded team, and they got to go
in
three
Philly.
Time zones away. Oh, gosh. If they lose, Mick Cronin, he will be in vintage form talking about why the body clock is the reason.
Well, and then on top of that, UCF's got a pretty good front court, and UCLA's pretty banged up.
Right. So, but if UCLA wins, then we get Mick Cronin versus Dan Hurley, and I feel bad for those officials already, because that'll be just they'll get so berated throughout that game that I don't know how they'll emerge with any self-esteem remaining. I mean, unless you're just impervious to the criticisms of short, angry, bald men, which, you know, we all probably should be.
What was Hurley's excuse at the Big East? I didn't know the official was there. It's like, you ran into him.
Yeah, at one point when he said he was trying to give up cursing for Lent, but then he gave up on that, so...
Also sit there. If I'm Dan's priest, I go, come on, think of something else. Like, that's not happening.
Be realistic.
Yeah,
about
like,
this.
Come on.
All right. Yeah, maybe it's like, okay, you can still curse, but just give up the F word.
Yeah,
for a while.
It's like, you know? How about maybe no GDs for Lent?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be appropriate given the spirit of Lent.
All right. Some superlatives that I was thinking about. Team facing the most pressure.
Do you have one that comes to mind for you?
You tell me if I'm wrong. I kind of think it's Arizona.
Yeah, Tommy Lloyd's underdelivered in the postseason so far.
I would listen to an argument that Lloyd is under more pressure than Arizona is, his team. But they've not gotten past the Sweet 16. He already did the move of don't call us soft, you know, just because we're a West Coast team. Like, when you look at their bracket, actually, I'm in the camp of, I thought the committee did a pretty good job. Like, I didn't sit there and go, this one's that much advantageous than the other. I just kind of think Arizona, at a certain point, it's like, if we're going to take you seriously, like, you're a one seed here. Like, it's kind of time.
Yeah, so I have Arizona winning the national title, which tells you all you need to know about what I think about their potential. But I do have a caution flag raised for the Sweet 16 matchup, specifically if it's Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin would be a difficult Sweet 16 matchup for Arizona. I actually think Arizona could handle Arkansas fairly well because Arizona has the guards to go toe-to-toe with Darius Acuff and Malik Thomas, but Arkansas doesn't have the bigs to go toe-to-toe with Krivas and Tobey Awaka. So I would like the Arkansas matchup for Arizona in the Sweet 16. I would be worried if it's Wisconsin because Boyd and Blackwell are so electric. And then Wisconsin at least has some beef on the interior, a little bit more so than Arkansas, to contend or mitigate Arizona's physicality.
I also thought about Purdue here in the sense that, like, I thought about going Purdue's under more pressure as a team because it's like this whole team was for this run. And this year's been a disappointment, but they've played their way back. I mean, they're a two seed. It's not like they have the world's, you know, toughest route. Matt Painter's not under any fire. You know what I mean? Like, I thought about Purdue, but I still think it's, to me, it's like the Arizona program.
Well, I would also throw Duke into the most pressure category because they squandered the perfect opportunity last year to win the national title because they could not execute. They could not get the ball in bounds in that Final Four game against Houston in the last couple of minutes. And that was just a full-on all systems failure with your season on the line with a generationally elite team that ranked higher at KPOM than just about any team in the 21st century. And they couldn't get it done with that team. Now they got another Naismith player of the year in Cam Boozer in all likelihood. And can they get it done? I mean, I think Final Four at minimum is the expectation here for Duke, but the reality is their path is brutal. They're down Caleb Foster. Patrick Dongba's coming back from injury. So the expectation versus the path, I just think is out of whack. Like, it's going to take a really good performance from Duke to meet the expectations.
The only reason why I left them off the list was I thought they had enough excuse with the injuries.
Yeah, he could hide behind the injuries if they fall short. But you look at it and it's like, all right, John Shire, you've been awesome so far succeeding Coach K. But if you fail to reach the Final Four here, then I think there begins to be some questions about, like, okay, John Shire, great coach, but, you know, maybe we're talking about him next year like we talk about Tommy Lloyd, all right? Like, clearly done an amazing job, but when push comes to shove in the tournament, how trustworthy are you?
I'll be happy to be that mouthpiece. All right, let's go with, along the same lines, person facing the most pressure.
Well, see, I have a different answer for this one.
All right.
It's similar, but it's a little different. Now, I guess I'll actually save the one that comes to mind for when we get to coach facing the most pressure. But so if we do person, I think it's Darren Peterson. He's finally opened up the last few days. He's finally let some people in on what was really going on with the cramping issue, the stuff between the ears. And I think it's good to take control of the narrative when the narrative has gotten so out of control. But it does mean he will be under the microscope this week. And their path is pretty tough. Like, they might have to deal with an underseeded St. John's team very early. I don't think their first round game is a total cakewalk against Cal Baptist. And you got, like, the comparison game that's going to be going on because the whole country is going to be watching A.J. DeBonsa and Cam Boozer and Darius Acuff and Kingston Flemings and Nate Amet. And Coa Pete and Braden Burries and all of these stud freshmen who are a part of this NCAA tournament, and Darren Peterson's going to be compared against them. And so I think there's a lot of pressure there.
I think you've sold me on that, because also it's super early in the process, but it does feel like the tide has turned in that more people are now considering DeBonsa as the number one pick. But it feels like if he goes and has a big tournament, he can just regain that.
Yeah, so I'm still in the DeBonsa camp. I don't know that I could see anything at this point from Darren Peterson to sway me on that. And I know that puts me probably still in the minority, but I don't have any of the questions on AJ DeBonsa that I have on Darren Peterson. Now, if you want to get into an intricate breakdown of their games and their long-term ceilings or whatever, that's fine. I know that's why some people still love Darren Peterson as number one. But when I look at the between the ears and the health stuff, I just see a brighter future for AJ DeBonsa and a much lower risk for a player with a comparable ceiling. It's not like AJ DeBonsa is out here with like some demonstrably lower ceiling as a player than Darren Peterson. I just don't think the gap talent wise is large enough to just totally overlook all the red flags with Darren Peterson.
Have you noticed there's been some momentum of people doing the move of, why should we not consider Boozer at one?
I felt that way, but then I watched the ACC tournament title game. Really, to me, was the perfect example of why Cam Boozer has not been consistently considered at number one. He struggled against Uganda and Yinso of Virginia on the interior. Onyinso had like 9 blocks in that game, and I'm pretty sure 5 of them were against Cam Boozer. And that length exists in the NBA. I mean, not every night, not against every team, but where Cam Boozer does a lot of his damage, he will be met with similar length in the NBA.
Coach facing the most pressure?
I'm going Mark Pope. That's okay. Part of the reason why. I mean, he's on the hot seat. If they lose their first round game, I'm sorry, he's on the hot seat going into next year. I know he's got the injury excuse with Jalen Lowe and Jaden Quaintance. I mean, I'm not forgetting about that, right? But it's Kentucky. The budget is what it is. And if you underdeliver, you go Sweet 16 and then first round exit when John Calipari goes Elite 8 and whatever he's about to go and do with Arkansas, like, I'm sorry, but you're going to be compared against him. And if your results fail to meet his, and they just fired that guy, or not, didn't fire him, but they were sick of him. I just think he's under a lot of pressure here to get it right next year, either way. But especially if they were to lose against Santa Clara.
He has aged like a president this year.
Well, it's been rough. It's been rough.
Like, I get it, cry me a river. Everyone would love to make what he makes and be under pressure, but like, he looks miserable on the sidelines.
I think he's gone through a lot of like legitimate anxiety and
let me tell you what, I can believe it.
Right. Like, you feel the pressure when you played for that school, you're underperforming, like you're trying so desperately to put the pieces together. I think Kentucky actually plays hard. Like when they lost to Gonzaga by 40 in Nashville, and I was at that game earlier this season, the narrative coming out of that one was this team doesn't play hard. I do think they play hard. I just think they're really, really flawed. I don't think they're tough on the interior. And I don't think they have enough perimeter shot making to make up for it.
No, I'm with you. I do not see an effort problem. I don't think that they can defend because I don't think they're like super athletic.
No.
All right.
I think he's under a lot of pressure.
No, I'm with you entirely. Most likely top 4 seed to lose. Let's say first weekend.
I mean, to me, it's so it's Alabama in the first round. If Alabama makes it out of the first round, I actually think there's a decent chance they might play Akron in the second round because Akron's got a banged up Texas Tech team. Similarly, if Texas Tech beats Akron, Alabama, I still think, matches up reasonably well with Texas Tech because it's a banged up Texas Tech team. So like the second round game, I feel like is far more winnable for Alabama. Not saying they're more likely to, I'm not saying they're likely to lose against Hofstra in the first round, but it's one of my top upset potential picks, right? So in terms of a 4 seed that could lose in the first round, it's Alabama. Now, if they win, I think I like them okay in the second round. But, I mean, they're at risk without Aiden Holloway and the way they played down the stretch. I mean, Alabama's not in a great place for a 4 seed.
I can't tell if this is me just being a hater, but I put Nebraska here. It's mainly like The last month was not good.
They went 6-6 after starting 20-0.
And like they weren't like at no point did you ever look at them like they're like an embarrassment or like I don't know. It's just there's something about it, man, that like I don't love that Troy matchup.
Troy beat San Diego State on the road this year. They also took USC to three overtimes when USC was actually fully healthy, when Rodney Rice and Chad Baker Mazzaro were playing. They took that team to triple overtime. So, and Nebraska is crazy. Jeffrey, they have never won an NCAA tournament game. Never done it.
And it's not like some of these like early. You can make the arguments like none of these losses are bad losses. Michigan by 3 on the road. Illinois, it was by 9, but remember it was like, you know, with a minute and a half to go, like they were in the game, but the game got out of hand. They lost to Purdue at home in overtime, and they lost to Iowa on the road in just a meat grinder. And then they lost, the only like really bad loss was they got smoked at UCLA. But like all of those teams are tournament teams. But I don't, like maybe this is me being a hater. Like,
It's just hard to see it. It's like Indiana football. You just got to see it. You got to see it to believe it.
All right. Okay. Let's go with second round matchup you want to see the most.
Yeah. So many. As you alluded to early, the potential second round games are just endless in terms of great matchups. St. John's, Kansas, Rick Pitino, Bill Self, made for CBS sort of potential there, jumps off. They should be swapped on the seeding line. I mean, St. John's should probably be a 4. Kansas should be a 5. But it doesn't matter if they play on the court. It's kind of like Kansas, or it's kind of like, Vanderbilt and Nebraska. Like, they should be flipped seeding-wise, but they're going to play each other, so it doesn't really matter. I think St. John's, Kansas, for the right to potentially play Duke in the Sweet 16, that's pretty good. That's hard to top.
I think I'm going to Arkansas, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I like it.
I think those are the two options, right?
Yeah, I like I mentioned, I am curious. The Duke second round game, either Duke Ohio State or Duke TCU, either one worth monitoring. I'm just saying, upset potential there. Could be a Duke runaway, absolutely. But if you're looking for a surefire banger, Wisconsin, Arkansas, or Kansas St. John's, they would both fit the bill.
All right, let's go with the unstable compound team. The team that anything's possible. You can see this team. You can see this team getting beat in the first weekend. You can see this team in the Final Four.
So Kansas would fit the bill. We've discussed them a little bit. So I would actually throw Tennessee in there.
I got them in a minute.
Okay. So my take on Tennessee is, if you get the version of Nate Oment that you had in the second half against Auburn, the sky's the limit. This is a little bit of an underseeded team in a chaos bracket here in the Midwest, because there's not really anything that terrifies me in the Midwest. I think it's kind of up for grabs. Like, Michigan is, I think, probably the most vulnerable number one seed, but they also have maybe the most favorable path. So I think the Midwest is the one that's most ripe for chaos. Tennessee could lose in the first round. I mean, they could lose in the first round, absolutely, to either Miami of Ohio or SMU. I don't think that's going to happen, but you could talk me into – this is a Tennessee team that beat Houston earlier on this season, that did pick up some good wins in league play. And Jacoby Gillespie was on a Sweet 16 team last year at Maryland. And Nate Oment, he was improving. He was getting a lot better before that weird, nasty fall where his leg buckled against Alabama. So if he's back 100% ready to go, then I actually think Tennessee could go either way. I could see them losing in the second round, or I can see them being right there in the Elite Eight for the third year in a row.
I promise this is not because of Saturday. I'm putting UConn on this list. I think we've been wanting UConn to be better than they are. They had a great non-conference, but it's like, if you can lose to Marquette and to Creighton basically in the last month of the season, you can lose to UCLA or UCF. But you could also talk me into, like, they just kind of needed to get out of Big East play.
Yeah. UConn's high variance. So I think they fit that bill perfectly. There's any number of outcomes there.
Biggest sleeper.
So I would look at South Florida as a team here for Memphis fans to know this team well. They the path is open for them. And I don't know that I love a second round game against Michigan State a whole lot. I think that would be a challenge. But in my first bracket that I still haven't really tweaked all that much, I really don't have a lot of like surprising double digit poorly seeded teams advancing. I do have some poorly seeded teams winning their first round game, but I think the Sweet 16's going to end up looking pretty chalky. Maybe Texas A&M. If they can kind of muck it up a little bit against Houston and get Houston's guards sped up, like that Houston team doesn't have the physically dominant, physically imposing sort of element that some prior Houston teams have had. So Bucky was one bad call away from beating Kansas with Samford, right? You give them a much more talented team here now. They could show some chaos as a 10 seed.
Now that Kansas team had been begging to get knocked out for like the last month of the season. Cause isn't that the year that Gonzaga just like obliterated them in the second round?
Yeah, they won that first round game and then they just rolled over.
Like, but I remember thinking that team that whole year, I was like, they've just been like, they've been screaming at us. They're not good. This is where I went with Tennessee. I actually think Tennessee's in a good spot. If I'm going to play one of the three seeds, I think I like UVA. I like whoever's going to come out of the SMU-Miami of Ohio matchup for them. Like, I kind of, like, I'm still not all the way there on Iowa State, even though, like, they clearly showed, like, against Arizona, like, hey, man, these two teams are really close. I just think it's kind of set up for them, and they're also in the spot where they're not a high enough seed where there's, like, a ton of pressure.